Good morning, everyone. I want to thank you all for showing up this morning instead of going out to the parade this morning. I do have to leave after the next presenter, so if there are any questions, I can take them at the end of my presentation. I would like to thank my two co-authors, Lynn Clay, who works with HUD, and Dr. Donnell Ivey, who worked in my office as well. But more importantly, I need to thank all of the people who supported the project, in particular the community health workers who really helped keep the project going and sustaining the project. Okay. So the issue that we're facing is that, you know, working in public housing, we know that housing residents suffer from health disparities related to environmental factors. You know, they're plagued with poverty. They don't have access to green space to do physical activity or even healthy foods. You know, there's a health care issue. Their neighborhoods may not be safe. Transportation may be an issue. There are all these language and literacy barriers as well. So all of these environmental factors lead to poor health outcomes, in particular obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and cholesterol. So on this slide right here, this just shows that interconnected challenges require interconnected solutions. So all of the challenges that I mentioned on the previous slide are shown here and shown how they are connected together and how we need to really look at all of these issues in order to get better health for these residents. So in 2004, the Urban Institute, they put out a report that talked about housing residents. They found that most of the residents were minorities, particularly African American and Latino, and that these minority groups were at a greater risk for developing cardiovascular disease. And in this HOPE 6 survey, you know, they found that these residents were even at greater risk of developing these conditions than the members of their own minority group. Okay. So just to give you a little background about the HOPE 6 revitalization programs. It was created in 1992, so it's congressionally mandated, and it serves two main purposes. The primary purpose is to tear down housing structures that are unsafe and unlivable and putting new structures in place. But then the second part was what they call the community supportive services piece. And this is grant money where the housing authorities could use to address some of these community needs, whether it be education, health, or, you know, getting people back to work. So around a little while later, after some more research had been done, HUD decided to partner with NHLBI to use our community health worker program because we had seen success in other low-income communities. So there were four sets of cohorts that received grants from 2007 through 2010, and we agreed to follow each cycle of grantees over 5 years as they implemented the program. Participation was encouraged, but it was not required. And the main reason why HUD really wanted to use the community health worker model is because of place-based solutions. We know that where you live often determines the type of decisions that you make, and you're influenced by the people that you live, work, and play with. You know, we need to have these concrete, effective strategies in place that will allow people to be exposed to different positive experiences, hoping that that would elicit a positive behavior change. And so we need to meet people at where they are, meet them where they need to be met. And that's where the community health worker really comes into play, because a traditional community health worker is a person who is a part of the community, and they are a trusted member. So we started the partnership back in 2007. At that time, we had 5 sites, and then we've expanded to 30 sites. You know, and speaking of partnerships, you know, each partner brings their own strength. So HUD, they invest the funding to sustain the program, and they also can get the housing authorities to the table, whereas NHLBI, we provide all the science-based materials and the technical assistance to get the program implemented. So this brings a really strong partnership together of two huge agencies that are working on a common goal. Okay. Here's just a snapshot of some of the sites that have participated. So we range across the entire U.S., from Arizona to D.C. to Washington to Kentucky, Virginia, North Carolina. And what's really interesting about the Durham 6 group, which you did not see on one of the previous slides as one of the cohorts, is that they actually did not receive funding to do this project. They were hand-selected sites by HUD who who came to them as, you know, health was an issue for their residents. So they were deeply invested in trying to address these health disparities. And so they worked closely with HUD and NHOBI to implement the program. And since then, all of them have been successful in getting additional grant funding, either from Hope 6 grants or from other outside funding sources. So it really shows that if you have people who are vested in the process, how much impact that they can make. So just to give you a little background about the Community Health Worker Initiative, the initiative really focused on building capacity of the CHW. We offer training on the different manuals and leadership development. We really want to engage the community, get their buy-in, get their support. We have a systems approach where we're linking community education with the clinical management piece. Where it's possible, we like for the housing authority to link up with a clinic or health department in their area so they can link the resident to those clinical services. And most importantly, we're about mobilizing communities so we can get an integrated and comprehensive approach to reducing the burden of CVD in these communities. In terms of program implementation, the housing authorities, they use our manual, which is called the With Every Heartbeat Is Life curricula. And in this curricula, it consists of 10 different sessions. It's all focused on improving the knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors towards cardiovascular disease. And this particular manual is just tailored towards African Americans, so it's culturally appropriate, it's language appropriate, and it can be implemented from three different strategies. So the first strategy is train a trainer, where the CHW will attend a 2 or 3 day training to understand the manual and know how to implement the manual. And once they're fully trained, they then go out into the community and implement group education sessions. The groups are typically small, about 10 to 15 participants per group. That way you can allow for a lot of engagement between the CHW and the participants. And with this strategy, they can do it with or without screening. So if they have a partnership with a health center or other medical provider, they can do screening such as diabetes, cholesterol, blood pressure. And the third strategy is the lifestyle and clinical management strategy. And this is where the CHW actually links up with a clinic and follows high-risk patients throughout their clinic experience. And the people who typically participate in this strategy have already been diagnosed with a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. In this particular project, we only use the train the trainer and the community education strategies. Okay. So the With Every Heartbeat Is Life Heart Health Program is CHW-driven, it's culturally responsive and language appropriate, and it comes as a comprehensive set. So not only do you have the manual, you also have a set of picture cards which the CHW can use during their educational session to kind of visualize the educational experience. And then we also have small risk factor booklets that can be given to the participant so they can take home and, you know, review the information and share with their family members and friends. The most important thing about this manual is that it is flexible. Like I said, there are 10 sessions, but sites can use the information that they need to. Like, for example, the Boston site, once they surveyed their residents, they realized that smoking was a huge issue in their community. So they started with the smoking session and really built their program around smoking cessation in their community. Other people may choose to, you know, condense some of the sessions down or combine some of the sessions. So the manual is very flexible in allowing them to meet the residents where they are. So what's inside the manual? So basically the manual has information about recognizing the signs of heart disease, knowing how to act in time for heart attack signs, you know, showing participants ways to increase their physical activity, how can they, you know, make healthy meals on a budget, you know, living smoke-free, how to manage diabetes and cholesterol and blood pressure, and aiming for a healthy weight. We also have one session that's a review and graduation, and then the 12th session is actually just used by the community health worker, and it includes some evaluation tools to help them track and manage their project. So like I said earlier, we chose to do the train the trainer strategy in the community education. So the CHWs who participate received a 2.5 day training. We administered pre and post tests to assess their knowledge. And then we also administered a feedback form just to see how well received the training was and any areas that we could improve the training for future training. Then they went on to do community education, where they not only offered community education, but they also implemented some supplemental activities. Those could be things like cooking demonstrations, implementing walking clubs, or grocery store tours, anything that will promote healthy living. And the CHWs actually administered pre- and post-tests to assess the knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors of the community participants. So some of the facilitators and challenges to implementation are listed here. You know, none of this was outside of the box. I mean, the facilitators, you always want to have a champion for your program. Partnerships naturally allow you to do more with your program. You know, having guest speakers that the participants can relate to. And as always, incentives, if you're able to offer them, will definitely get people to your program. Some of the challenges, which are not really unique to this program, are, you know, scheduling and transportation, recruitment and retention, and, you know, working with the different partners and also finding spaces where you can do physical activity. If you remember from the slide before, some of these sites are, you know, in areas where weather is an issue. So if you're doing a program in the wintertime and there's 5 feet of snow outside, well, a walking club is not going to work. So you just have to be creative about the types of activities that you want to do. So some of the solutions, we've, you know, really engaged the residents to see what they wanted to do. You want to poll them and see the best times of the day. You know, if you have to offer childcare or if you have to go out off-site, you want to offer transportation. And just really being creative about how you are implementing the program so you're meeting their needs. So in terms of program monitoring and evaluation, sites receive ongoing monitoring and technical assistance. We held monthly conference calls and or webinars with the sites, and that allowed each of the cohorts to come together once a month so they could talk amongst themselves just to see how each other was implementing the program and to offer some solutions to any of the challenges that they may be experiencing, and also to show off some of the successes that they've had implementing the program. We also required them to submit quarterly progress reports, which help inform a larger process evaluation. And then the sites also attended an annual in-person refresher training, which also allowed them to, you know, come back to the table, get updated information, and also to network with the different sites to help build those interpersonal relationships. Okay. So I do have some evaluation results. We actually did a large-scale evaluation of all of our community health worker programs, because we have programs for African Americans, Latinos, American Indian, Alaska Natives, and Filipino. So some of the HUD sites were included in this particular evaluation, but I did want to share some of the results that we've seen. So with the train-the-trainer strategy, you can see that overall knowledge increased significantly from 76 to 84%. The percent who say that reducing CBD risk is important was already very high, about 97%, and it went up just a smidgen. And the biggest thing is that after they were trained on the manual, their confidence to teach the manual improved from 81 to 95%. For community education, we saw improvements across the board in their intent to change their heart-healthy behaviors. We asked questions about their salt and sodium intake, cholesterol and fat, and weight management. And this was on a scale of 1 to 4, where 1 means I never do this activity, and 4, I always do this activity. So you can see that there was some significant improvements across the board. In terms of knowledge, knowledge improved from 51 to 76%. So that was a huge increase. So you have the improvement in knowledge coupled with their intent to change behavior. So hopefully, you know, if we surveyed them again today, that, you know, the knowledge has been retained and they're taking that knowledge and translating it into behavior action. The percent who said they were physically active went up from 41 to 59%. And the people who did not smoke was already pretty high at 81%. It only went up about a percentage point. Okay. So the overall results were the training were well received by the residents. And I get calls all the time from some of the CHWs who have implemented the program saying how great this is, how well received the community members received the program, and how it's been, you know, transformative for not only them, but for their participants. The housing authorities have now been empowered to continue offering these group education sessions and supplemental activities. And some of the older cohorts, the ones that started in 2007, we don't give them as much technical assistance because they're up and running, but we still get feedback from them saying that they're still doing the community education sessions, they're still recruiting CHWs, and they're continuing on with their program activities. So just to kind of wrap up, we know that implementing the With Every Heartbeat Is Life curriculum is not the total answer to solving the cardiovascular health disparities issue in public housing, but we know that it's placing these communities on a real path to get some real solutions. We know that these sustained interventions must be linked to address these interrelated problems that I talked about earlier, the poverty, the lack of transportation, lack of access to green space, et cetera. And HUD continues to use housing as a platform to improve health outcomes for low-income people. And that we know that you, in order to get behavior change, you have to show people how to change. You can't just say, here's a pamphlet, do what it says. You need to be actively engaged in helping them change their behaviors. So just some examples of sustainability that we've seen across the years. One of our sites in Norfolk, they actually received a grant from Home Depot to continue their program implementation. What we've heard from the sites is that they need to find out how to find funding outside of HUD-sponsored funding. So we've given them avenues where they can look for additional grant funding. We've hosted webinars on how to, like, apply for grants, you know, how to write the pieces of the application. Boston, which I mentioned earlier, who decided to focus on smoking as their first session, they actually went on to implement a smoke-free policy at their housing authority. And one of our sites in Columbia, South Carolina, received a competitive award to one of our announcements to become an NHLBI clinical champion. So what's next? We want to continue conducting additional evaluation activities that are just HUD-specific. And HUD and NHLBI are committed to growing the partnership. And there are plans to implement statewide trainings. In particular, we want to take this on the road to Virginia to train all of the housing authorities in Virginia. And some of you may know that there has been a slight policy shift from the HOPE 6 grant program, which was based on building structures and the community supported services, into the Choice Neighborhood Grant Program, which is more focused on the surrounding neighborhoods of the actual housing authority. So that will allow the housing authorities to have a little bit more flexibility in how they can use their funds and also which residents they can serve. So it's not just the actual people who are living in that particular structure. So I think I have maybe a minute or so to take any questions. If there are any, yes. Okay, to answer your first question, after we implemented the program and did show some positive success, the CHW program, well, With Every Heartbeat Is Life curriculum, was added to the NOFA, which is the Notice of Funding Availability, in the HOPE 6 grant. The Choice Neighborhoods is still very new, and we haven't quite merged over to that yet, but so yes, it was incorporated into one of the funding announcements. And the second question is about CHWs adopting some of these habits. Yes, we really look towards the CHWs to be kind of like the change agents in the community. So we encourage them to go beyond just the obvious and, you know, getting, for example, like healthy access to healthy foods. I mean, that's bigger than just, you know, being able to get to the grocery store. You know, you may want to do the community gardens, or you have to address the transportation system or the crime in your neighborhood so you feel safe enough to even go out of your home to get to the healthy food. So the CHWs have been very receptive to that and really looking, you know, long-term issues of how to make their communities healthier. Okay, I can take one more question, then I have to stop.
With respect to the evaluation that you're doing on this, is there any looking through
Not at this point in time, just because it's been very challenging getting the housing authorities to actually link up with a community health center or other medical provider. So getting that outcomes data, I'm guessing you're talking about like reduce heart attacks and, you know, that sort of thing. That's been really challenging. In our other evaluation project, we did have one, but it was a Filipino site that actually was a FQHC, a federally qualified health center. So they were actually able to collect that type of information. And across the board in that particular site, we did see improvements in some of those outcomes. But we don't go as far out as, you know, long-term outcomes like reduction in heart attack and stroke. Okay. Great. Thank you.